In this double bonus episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss luck, water affinities, and starting a book in the middle of a series with Caitlin Davies, the voice actress behind the House of Night series by PC Cast and Kristen Cast.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series and authors that's full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda. We're just going to head right into the interview with Caitlin Davies. We recorded this after our discussion episode was released with special guest author of the series, PC Cast, but let's face it, we love House of Night too much, and it is too good not to give it a little bit more attention. We warn you now, it does contain spoilers. We hope you enjoy.
Hello!
Hi! Hello! So, we're just going to ask you our would you rather question. Since our episode was released this week, it's going to be a little bit different than it normally would be, and we're not going to... Oh, it's kind of sad. We don't have to be all ridiculous and over the top, because...
We can't be ridiculous and over the top, because this is an extra, extra special bonus episode.
It is extra, extra.
To celebrate the end of House of Night series, original series.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, you still have the other world, so.
It's exactly. True, we
and
do.
And we are thinking about doing the other world for our supernatural summer.
Yes. Right? Well, we have to.
Kind of have to, yeah.
I'm sorry, we have to.
Well,
I love this series more than you do, and I understand that, but I'm putting my foot down.
That's fine, because I insist we do the Gail Carriger extra Parasolverse book, so you know, it's a give and take relationship we have.
The other world is pretty cool, because PC, Cass, and Kristen... kind of reimagine what would happen if they made if some of the characters made other choices.
I
really enjoy the Other World series. I just finished Forgotten, like, oh, it's been like a month ago now, but it's so different and I love it. Like, yeah. What is this crazy Neferet? Like, she's not crazy, she's kind.
She's still a psycho. Come on.
She's a psychopath, of course, but She's a kinder psychopath than this one, which might make her more dangerous.
But this is what I said about the Other World series. Everybody on the internet's like, oh, Neferet, I feel so sorry for her. I like her now. It's like, no, she's still a homicidal, murderous bitch.
Yeah, no,
she's got style and panache, but she's still a psychopath.
It'll be fun to see if maybe the two Neferets meet in Bound. I feel like that might be the... I haven't read it yet, so... I have no idea, but I'm just guessing. Maybe they meet? I don't know.
I totally think they're going to meet, and I am, like... I want to see the crazy, like, skeletal spider legs Neferet coming out of the grotto. That is, like... I have fingers crossed, toes crossed for scary-ass Neferet to come
noise.
Out.
All that skittering and...
It's going to be good. Can't wait to see what happens when you do that one.
That would be fun, right? Two Neferets talking to each other. I've had to do that a few times with characters talking to each other, like, that are from the opposite worlds. It's interesting. Yeah.
It feels a little bit Gollum Smeagol, doesn't it? Like, you know.
Oh, okay, which one is this?
I have to use two highlighter pens for this one, because otherwise it gets a bit confusing.
Yep.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, but no, we can still get very excited about this, because it's special.
Oh, yeah. I know, but I was just meaning we normally do, oh, it's time, but it's not time, because it's its own time.
Yes.
It's even more special.
Yes, it is.
So we should go crazier, more over the top than we normally are? I don't know about that. That might want to do. I was going to say, it might make you want to hang up on us. Because while we are normal people, sometimes we don't act like it.
Okay. Normal is overrated.
Okay. So, this is an extra, extra, extra special bonus edition. It's a
extra,
double
extra.
Bonus. Yes, it's double special bonus fantasticalness, because we did just talk to PC Cast, but now we have Caitlin Davies, who, you know how obsessed we are with audiobooks. And now we have the audiobook narrator of the majority of the House of Night series. And we're so happy that she's here. We love you in a non-awkward way.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be here.
I freely admit I love you in an awkward way.
You can love me in any way you want.
Yeah. This is like, you know, when you go to a vending machine and you get two Kit Kats out and it's like, yes, I've struck it lucky. This is what I'm feeling right now.
Yay! Thank you.
So thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate you.
Yes.
So I guess we should just go right in and start asking our would you rather questions and get your thoughts on all of those. And then we're going to ask you some other questions. Okay?
All right. Sounds good.
So awesome. The would you rather questions, we always pose one or two with the House of Night ones because the fan base is so amazing. They do get an extra special one. But we posted this on Sunday, the 9th of February, and that was after we talked to PC Castle. PC never actually got to hear these responses, so she will now. Yay!
Yay!
And you do. So what we asked on Sunday the 9th of Feb for our listeners was, would you rather see versions of the future or write prophetic poetry? So essentially, would you rather have Aphrodite's or Cremisha's prophetic gift?
Well, I was an English major in college, so I'm going to have to go with Cremisha's poetic prophetic gift. And also, I don't know, I mean, Aphrodite's gift, that sounds pretty painful, and I'm not all about the blood coming from the eyes and having to release someone's So, you know, Cremisha's gift seems much, much more along the lines of what I would want.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that's what we all said.
I'm not very good at poetry. I was limericks. I'm going down the roots of comedy. And actually, surprisingly, on social media, on Facebook, 71% said they would like future sight, and only 29% said prophetic poetry. On Instagram, 79% said future sight, and 21% said prophetic poetry, which is really difficult to say a prophetic poetry, by the way. And on Twitter, 70% said future sight and 30% said prophetic poetry, which I thought was really interesting.
I just think that the majority of those people, like, they haven't read the series. And so they're just going from their base, like, base thought, ooh, would I rather see visions of the future or write poetry? They don't know that Aphrodite's bleeding from her eyes.
No, I mean, I'll read a couple of the responses out, and you'll get a sense of like who may have read the series or have at least an idea of what's gone on. They've probably got an idea based from the previous discussions that we'll have. So Socklord on Twitter said, I would rather see the future because if I made that poetry first, nobody would read it because I suck at writing poetry. And also, I will be able to see the future events such as terrorist attacks or wars, be able to warn everyone and maybe be able to stop them. I would also predict when there's sales on pizza and I will be very happy for a very long time. I feel that, Socklord. I really feel that.
maybe though the goddess would give you incredible writing skills. Had the greatest skills until she was touched by the goddess. So maybe you'd have incredible writing skills then.
True. It's like Constance on Facebook says, I choose visions. I have a thing about having to know everything of everything, good or bad, so the poetry would be just too frustrating for me. Plus, it doesn't say if you'd be human or fledgling with visions, and it's only painful when human. So there is that.
All right. That's a good answer.
Is that true, though?
Well, no, because she... Well, I mean, we get into that a little more in the other world, so I won't get
right.
Okay, so...
We are spoiler-filled. Spoiler.
She still has the blood thing. Yeah. And the pain a little bit. Yeah.
I did notice in the series, though, when Thanatos spoke to Aphrodite, she did say, if you let the visions come naturally and stop fighting them, it won't be as painful.
Right. We haven't seen that quite happen yet, but maybe.
Yeah. I quite liked on Twitter, Headzilla said, roses are red, violets are blue. Here comes a massive great ball to do rude things to you.
I love it.
I hate that one.
That's because we have a thing about the ball season being very uncomfortable about that.
We do. We do. Especially after what PC told us.
Whoa.
Worse. It was worse.
Oh, okay.
You haven't listened to it. You didn't hear. You didn't hear what she told us. She told us about the scene with Stevie Ray fighting the bulls and, you know, like accidentally calling both of them, and then Rafame coming and paying her price.
Right.
She informed us about the original version of paying the price, which was Rafame being raped by the bull, and we died a little bit when that happened.
I'm still in shock.
That's actually like one scene that really sticks out in my mind from that series, like performing that scene where he saves her there. Yeah, so knowing that, that's worse.
yeah. Yikes.
It's kind of like, how do you prepare for a scene like that? I mean, you read the book before you do the performance. It's not like there's the book, please read it out for us. It's knowing that's coming up, it just feels so horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of, obviously, like as a narrator, I'm like living the scene as I'm narrating it and being the characters. So, but like really, like tough scenes like that, sometimes you do step out just a little bit to get through. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You can see by Amanda's face, she's still emotionally traumatized by that entire.
Yeah.
No, PC never shared that with me.
Well, now you know.
She hasn't shared that one.
We asked her about the bull scene.
Yeah.
And I had read some interviews. And from the interviews that I read, it seemed like the bull scene that she was referring to, or at least the one that Claire and I were thinking of, was with Neferet and the bull. And so we're thinking, okay, so there was an extended scene that she wrote that actually says what Neferet and the bull do together. So that's what we were expecting for her to say. And then, no, it was 1,000 times worse. So that's like, we've posted pictures of us like hands on faces, like, oh my God, what is this? What is happening? Because we weren't expecting it. It was way worse.
I can totally see PC Cass going there, though.
Of course.
Her imagination is incredible. Yeah.
She's not a no-holds-barred type person. If it fit the scene, you know she will put it in there.
Yeah, she will.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why we love her so much.
Oh, I like people who aren't afraid to go there. You know, go to the next step. Okay, next question.
Oh,
so
yes.
This one was another social media question, but we posed this specific to the House of Night fan groups. And again, this was posted on Sunday, the 9th of February, so PC didn't get to hear the responses to this one. If you are Kelowna at Dallas's trial and you must mete out the punishments, would you rather decapitate Dallas or exile Elliot and Curtis from Vampire Society?
So as Kelowna, I would rather execute Dallas than exile Curtis and Elliot, because exiling Curtis and Elliot as fledglings away from Vampire Society, they're still going to be doomed to a death, slow and painful. So I think it is actually much more humane what he does to Dallas. And even, I think it was in Revealed that this happened. I think Kelowna even has some qualms about it in the end, where he wonders if Elliot and Curtis received the correct punishment because you know, they were just following their leader. So I would go with what Kelowna actually says in that book, where he's a little like, I don't know if that was the best for them.
Yeah, Elliot and Curtis are so in the background as well that it kind of like they haven't had any development as characters in and of themselves, that to suddenly go, yeah, I'm going to just drop you off in the middle of the Oklahoma wilderness. Sucks to be you. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, well, you don't know these people to know if they truly deserve the punishment.
Yeah, but they did ask them, like, what choice are you going to make? Basically, which side are you going to choose? What are you going to do? And they didn't pick the right path. So I'm not saying let's just exile and murder everyone who doesn't make the right choices, but still, they chose.
They did.
Yeah. They chose poorly. Yeah.
They did choose poorly.
Yeah. The House of Night fan group as well on Facebook, they actually 63% said that they would execute Dallas. And only 37% said that they would meet out the exile of Elliot and Curtis. There was a Dallas on the group should put a comment in. I honestly think Dallas makes me look bad. So yeah, he's going bye bye. You know, she had no qualms about lopping his head off. And to be fair, you know, it's kind of an experience. You're gonna do it once in your life.
Cute summer. Just decapitate someone.
Yeah, I mean, fictionally, I'm not going to do it. I don't have a sword, and I would use an axe. It's easier. Swords aren't very good for beheading. I've read enough historical stuff. I know this stuff.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! I think I said that I wanted to kill Dallas just because he hurt my Stevie Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And he deserved it. Jerk.
He went evil over nothing. He went evil over rejection. That's toxic.
That is. He was a very toxic character.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that PC writes so many journeys of redemption throughout the House of Night, but like Dallas just doesn't seem like he's going to be coming back.
Mm-mm.
So if there was any way forward for him.
No, I think once you electrocute and open up the shades on someone so they crisp up and fry in the sun, I don't think there's any coming back from that.
Oh. And I was having a conversation, it was about a different series of books, but there was like the redemption arc involved. And it was pointed out, not everybody can or should be redeemed. You can't have a series of book and everybody turns into the good guy or starts to do the right thing.
It's true. Kind of waters down the whole redemption then.
Yeah. Because whatever sacrifice is done, you know, if somebody does sacrifice himself or does turn from evil to good, then what they're doing is minimized.
Right.
So we asked a couple of other questions. The next one is, would you rather wield the power of old magic like Zoe does with the Seer Stone or the tendrils of darkness like Neferet?
Okay, that one's easy. I would rather wield old magic. It is very dangerous, but is neither good nor bad. So I think that's a safer route to go than the tendrils of darkness where you feed it like human blood and flesh. So, yeah, I'm not all, I mean, I actually, like, have a great aversion to blood, so, yeah, that wouldn't work for me at all. Definitely.
Yeah, you've got to keep the wet wipes handy if you're Neferet, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm not thinking that way, actually. What kind of old magic would you be, like, more like skeeth? Or, you know, using the Seer Stone, would you want something you'd have to wield? Or, you know, would it be a bit more with the, you know, the elemental, the pixies and the brownies that came out in Skeeth? Is there a route you'd go down?
Well, I think it's definitely safer if you have, like, an object. Like, it seems like, you know, all the sprites and everything, if you decide to join that and become one of them, like, you lose all your humanity. So spoiler, in the Otherworld series there is someone who might make that choice. So Yeah, no, I would rather safer option, Seer Stone.
At least you can put it in a drawer.
Exactly. You can decide when to use it and when not, and, like, you know, have a little removal from that kind of dangerous magic when you want to.
Yeah. You're much more sensible than the way I went with. I went straight down the tendrils of darkness. I was like, yeah, oh, yeah. Feed them my blood. I want to be the puppet master. It's like having Sith powers.
Yep. You would be pretty powerful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I definitely want to be Nefert too. Not because I want to be terrible, but she's an amazing villain. And I always like the villains. So I'm gonna be Nefert and I'm gonna have my tendrils of darkness. But I do wanna say, I hope you enjoy your new life, wee Denise. I hope you enjoy being a pixie.
Yeah.
Oh, wee Denise.
Wee Denise. Seemed like she might be better off with the sprites.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah. So, would you rather be trapped under the tree on the House of Night ground that everything seems to come in and out of, or be trapped in the grotto?
Definitely the tree. The grotto seems like it would just be cold, wet stone. At least with the tree, you'd be in, like, organic matter, like living things somewhat close by. No, I mean, I bet Nefert's going a little insane in that cold grotto.
Oh, I can't wait till she comes out. It's gonna be so great and terrible.
No, definitely tree. Tree seems like it'll be easier to, like, get out of too, in a weird.
Yeah. It feels safer to me, too, because it's on the grounds of the House of Night, and some awful things happen there, of course, and because of that tree. But still, it just seems safer to me than the grotto.
Yeah. I just think the grotto seems a bit skanky, like, stagnant and... What goes on in grottos, you know? No.
Especially a grotto where vagrants frequent.
Yes!
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably not going to be good.
It's not going to be chlorinated.
Ew. Yeah. It's not going to be good.
To see if Nefert comes out of it, like, what she looks like.
Oh, I know, it's going to be so bad, and I can't wait.
Fan art is going to explode at that point.
Oh.
That's going to be an interesting book character cosplay for me to be, because you know I'm totally gonna do that.
Yeah.
Of course. I need giant spider legs. I need to start working on that now. Okay, so another question. In the Mayo Hotel, would you rather be a willing acolyte of Nefert or be a puppet for a tendril of darkness?
I think I'd have to go with puppet. Yeah, because at least that way it's like you're not the one committing the crimes. Like, you haven't willingly decided to commit the crimes. You've been forced to commit the crimes and the horrible deeds. Whereas if you're a willing acolyte, like, you have a price to pay with that. Like, you're culpable in everything that you do. You've made that decision. So yeah, even though being a puppet is, like, horrible and awful, I think I'm gonna have to save my soul on that one.
you're such a nice person.
You are so nice.
Oh, honestly, so nice. And it makes me feel like such a garbage person for being like, no, I will be a willing acolyte. I will help the puppet master wield the sword. Oh God, you're so nice. I'm just gonna have an existential crisis again. I had one in the same place yesterday.
I just want to teach people how to Charleston, and that's what I would do. I will buy your wine and do the Charleston. I'm okay with that.
That doesn't seem like too bad a job, does it? Buy the wine, get the nibbles, you know, just set up a cocktail party. There's the entertainment.
Just then you just have to turn a blind eye to all of the carnage around you.
Yeah.
Which is kind of tough.
Just turn the notifications off on your phone. Don't look at the news. You're fine.
And wave your flag.
It means people, it isn't means. My God, I'm a garbage person.
It's okay. It's okay to be a garbage person. It's not okay.
I'm just going to have an existential crisis. I had one in this exact same place yesterday. Okay.
Very good. In the toilet. It's very good.
Have one.
Anyway.
Let's move on from that.
So these were old would you rathers that we asked on social media or each other during previous discussion episodes. We also asked these PCs, Cass, because we just think it's silly enough that we need to know the answers. Would you rather be a red fledgling slash vampire or a blue fledgling slash vampire? You can pick your colour.
Well, my favourite colour is blue. So the blue vampires just feels like they can still go out in sunlight, like they have more freedom. The red ones are kind of cool in their powers too.
Yeah,
that's a tough one, but I think blue, just so I could walk around in daylight. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then my powers, so I would definitely, it would be between spirit and water. I was a competitive swimmer growing up.
Ooh.
So I have like a big connection with water. Yeah.
Dual element.
That makes me think of Forgotten. You're not going to die in a swimming pool, are you?
I hope not. But yes, yes. We got to that scene. I was like, oh, yep, know this. Not the blood in the water, but yes.
Yeah.
Everything else. Mm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I totally thought you were going to go down the wrong route and go down the mermaid scene with Dallas and.
No. That was gross. That was gross. And like, kudos to you for doing those awkward and gross scenes. But Aaron with the wet t-shirt contest in the fountain by Dragon's funeral pyre. Mm-hmm. Gross.
Yep.
That was gross. So good job. Good job to you.
Thank you.
It was just so inappropriate.
Little Easter eggs thrown into those books.
See, I like the idea of being a red fledgling because it's the whole Jedi mind powers again, you know, free pizza, mind control. And it's a little bit similar to a traditional vampire as well. I don't mind just being out in the nighttime. I'm a bit of a night owl anyway. So yeah, I think I'll probably go down a red fledgling route.
Yeah, I like a traditional vampire more, so I would be red also.
Right.
Although, like, you know, like, and you can still be red and still have your cool affinities. So, yeah. I'm going to be red.
Next question.
Oh, this is my favorite question of all of the House of Night would you rather questions. And that's a lot because we broke this down into four episodes. There's a lot of House of Night would you rather questions. But this one is absolutely my favorite because it's the most ridiculous.
Oh, I'll prepare. Okay.
Would you rather wear the Christmas tree boots or the snowman scarf that Zoe got for her birthmas present every day for a week, not during the holiday season, in public, not tucked into anything, fully visible? Which present are you going to wear?
I think I might have to rock the boots.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, that can just be a conversation piece, and you don't have to really explain it. And plus, not everybody's going to, like, look down at your feet. So, you know.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I didn't even think about people not looking at them. I just assumed that people would be like, oh, there come the Christmas tree boots. But no, you're right. They probably wouldn't even look down. They wouldn't even notice.
It's only if you put bells on them that people really look at your shoes and go, what? Elf boots kind of thing. No. Oh, I like the scarf. Why am I the only one who would wear the scarf?
I don't know why you're the only one who would wear the cashmere snowman scarf, because it's weird. It's awkward.
But I can't walk in heels anymore.
Well, that's a good reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that works.
I would rent the boots if they were flat. God, I'm so old.
Just have weak ankles. You're not old.
No, I had to give them up when my center of gravity changed 5 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Okay. Well, that's all of our would you rather questions. Thank you for answering all of them, as ridiculous as some of them might have been.
I love them.
So now we have a few other questions that we wanted to ask you, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
So which character from the House of Night is your favorite to be?
So probably to voice is Neferet. I mean, you gotta love the baddies. Like, it's just so much fun to do her voice and like to be her and just to be so evil. It's great. I love it. Probably Zoe is like the closest to me and my natural speaking voice. So that one is fun to do. And then I would have to say, as like a character overall, probably Aphrodite. And she has, I feel like, one of the biggest journeys over the course of the series. So
definitely.
She's like a really fun character. Yeah. And her voice is fun too.
Do you have a least favorite to be?
So I feel like character wise, I never was like as on board with Aaron. I don't know. Just felt a little like she didn't have a lot of growth and she just didn't have a lot of intuition, and no, Aaron. Sorry, Aaron. And then as far as like voices go, so Burned was actually the very first audiobook I ever narrated.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
So and then we went back and did some of the earlier ones later. So they had another narrator on that. Yes, it's a long story. We can get into it. But so when I went in, like, I had been acting before and I'd done some voice acting, but I had never done an audiobook before. And so I didn't really process the fact that I'd have to maintain the voices for 3 days straight from 10 to 5. And like, so I picked in Burned, I picked some really deep, gravelly voices for like Kelowna and some of the men. And then I was like, it hurts. And so like over the course of the series, I've had to like my vocal cords have gotten stronger as I've done more books, but also like I've had to slightly morph them a little bit so I can sustain them. So, but Kelowna is probably a harder voice for me to do. Mm-hmm. Yes. And, but it was a good lesson to learn early on. Create voices you can sustain.
That's a good tip, Amanda. Write that one down in your book.
Yes. Oh, I've actually learned that one in my classes that I've taken. Yeah, so.
That's okay. This actually brings up an interest. This is something I was talking to Amanda about earlier before the call connected. And I was just wondering, because you only have narrated part of the series, I didn't realise that Burn was your first one.
Mm-mm.
What's it like taking over from another narrator for whatever reason? You know, why is probably not important at all, but what's it like to take over and then have to create the voices potentially again, or do you have to try and recreate or mimic what previous people have done? It seems like a harder process.
It is, and actually it was made harder by the fact that there was about 3 different narrators prior to
we
know that Jenny Lamia did 4 and 5, and then Cassandra Morris did 6. Who did the first 3 originally?
I think it was Edwina, I want to say Wren. She's Australian, I believe. Yeah. I don't know. And I have no idea why the changes happened or anything regarding that. But like, so each of those 3 narrators did do them slightly differently. So I did listen to clips of different, and I was like, well, so I tried to keep the, when I did Burned, I tried to keep the essence of what I felt like some of them had done. And then I tried to also make it my own a little bit too.
Yeah.
Didn't want to like be so off base, but again, not all of them did the same voices, so it was a little like, well, we'll take what we, yeah. And I went more, I think, off of Edwina, the original, who did the first 3, than I did Jenna and Cassandra.
Yeah. It's like with Aphrodite, you could tell she was less of an airhead when you took over. Like, it was, I don't mean that to disrespect anybody, but You know, you know, you know, you think of Clueless, the movie Clueless, and when Cher's like, oh, yeah, and like the twirling the hair kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I got that very strong impression. And then when it was like burned and it was kind of tightened, the performance was tightened up and reined in, and it was a bit more formed. It's like, yeah, you've kind of like taken Aphrodite, kept the essence of what other people have created, or as PC cast and Kristen cast have intended her to be, and just made her a bit more of a solid voice.
Yeah, I mean, I think also I was helped by the fact that by that point in the series, we knew a lot more about her too.
Yes.
So, so like she had become, I mean, she was always a great and wonderfully developed character, but we just knew more about her essence at that point. And I think she had become a more complicated character by that point too.
Oh, so, definitely.
Yeah.
She's probably the most complicated out of everybody for me. Like you said, her character arc was huge.
Yes. Yeah, no, she's a fun one.
That's really interesting. We're always taking the mick out of the twins every time we go through.
We do a very like ditzy, oh my god, twin, oh my god.
And then we totally go into it for far too long, and then it just gets totally awkward. And then when like they split, it just did not work, but we kept it up like totally. I'm far too British to pull off like Elliot Ditz. Oh bless.
Oh goodness.
So is there any voice that you've ever wanted to do but never found the character that it belongs to yet? So outside of the House of Night series, this is, you know, Caitlin Davis, the audiobook narrator, not necessarily the narrator of House of Night. Is there any voice that you've kind of like picked up that you thought, I want to find the character where that voice fits, but you've never found them yet?
No, more so because I kind of let the voices come to me through whatever the author has written for the character. So if there is that voice and character out there, I haven't met them yet. So for me, it's like the voices really comes to me from reading like the character descriptions and what they do and their essence. So and then they just the voice kind of appears in my head and we go from there. So, yeah, I mean, doing fantasy characters like dragons and fairies and stuff like that is always fun. Like when you get to do like more into the world of like strange voices, that's always really fun. But So I've done some books with dragons, and that's it's fun to like stretch it that way, and you can do whatever you want because like, what does a dragon sound like?
Good question.
So we know that Burned. Now we learned that Burned is your first audiobook. So how did you get into doing it?
Oh, it's a fun story. I came to New York, was doing the acting, and just so you know, like the majority of audiobook narrators are stage or film actors as well. So about 90%, or they've had training or a previous career in acting. Yeah. And then about 10% are like authors. So I was an actor living in New York. And then in between jobs, I was a swim instructor because of my swimming background.
Right.
So get there. You'll see how the story ends. So I was teaching some swimming lessons, and this fellow swim instructor, I was talking to her, and she knew I was an actor. And I said, you know, I'd love to get into voice acting. And she goes, oh, you should talk to my uncle. She gave me his contact information. It turns out her uncle is one of the premier audiobook directors in New York City.
Whoa.
What?
Paul Rubin, who I can't praise enough. So I contacted him, and he's like, well, I'm offering a 6-week audiobook class if you want to take it. Meanwhile, he told me later, he's like, I'm thinking, why is my niece giving out my name to all these people? Like, so I took it. And a week later, he contacted me and says, I have this audition for this big series we lost a narrator for. Would you come in? And I said, of course. And it was for Burned. And I booked it, and I cannot thank PC Cast, Kristen Cast, Macmillan Audio, Paul Rubin enough for taking a chance on a newbie. They could have very easily gone with an established narrator at that time, and they gave me a shot, and it launched my audiobook career.
That's awesome.
I think it's very telling with PC cast, because when we talked about the TV series, she was very on board with new talent.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, she's very, you know, so the same situation as you, as a new, brand new audio narrator, she's willing to take a chance on new talent. That is amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
And not all authors are. So it's really wonderful that she does.
Yeah. How do you differentiate between a voice actor and audiobook narrator? Because we've talked to a couple of audiobook narrators now, and they very much differentiate them as different jobs, the different categories. So how is it different for you? Like, to say, this is how I'm a voice actor, and this is how I'm an audiobook narrator.
Well, I would say, like, audiobook narration falls under voice acting. It's just, like, another category of it. So, like, the same way you would think of acting in general, like, live performance, it's very different between film, TV, stage, commercial. Like, those are different types of, like, live performance acting. For audiobook narration, you have to play all the characters. So that's, like, a big distinction. And you have to be able to also, while you're narrating, be like living that moment. So living the moment, even when you're not voicing the character or like necessarily being the character, which is like very different than other kinds of voice acting, where if like you're doing animation, you're just mainly sticking with one character for a track.
Yeah.
So, and you don't get to, and even in some of the voiceover world, most of the time you're by yourself, but occasionally you get to like play off other people. And starting to happen in the audiobook world, sometimes with multicast narrations, but majority of the time you're by yourself. So it's a little different.
It's a lot more preparation, obviously, for an audiobook because of you are the cast of characters.
Yeah.
So it's like a significant amount. It must be really strange. See, Amanda's got aspirations to be a voice actor / audiobook narrator. I just want to listen. First of all, I'm a fan. However, voice acting and audio narration are often separated within like your CV. This is my voice acting career. This is my audiobook career. This is my acting career. And I was just finding out that distinction is really interesting. Really interesting. Yeah, so that was a completely selfish question. Thank you.
You'll get different answers from different people. Because, like, I would distinctly say, like, that audiobook narration is a part of voiceover acting. It's just a different element. Like, it would be, like, if you think of voiceover acting, like, animation is separate. Commercial voiceover acting is separate. Audiobook narration is separate. So, like, yeah, each of those has slightly different disciplines under the umbrella, I would say, of voiceover acting.
So the cousins are the same family tree, really.
Yeah.
Cool. That is really cool. So has there been any favorite book or series that you've voiced, that you've done so far from being launched?
So, I mean, I've lived, gosh, now I'm aging myself, but it's been almost a decade with The House of Night. So, like, I really, and because they were my first characters, I have a real affinity and, like, love for them. They feel a little bit like my family, and some of the easiest characters to, like, jump into because I've lived with them for so long. But then, so outside of House of Night and PC Cast and Kristen Cast's other works, I would say if you like steampunk fiction,
We do.
Lindsay Brocker's Dragon Blood series is very fun, and I really enjoy narrating that one because there's like talking swords and dragons and sorceresses and pirates and fighter pilots. It's like, it's got everything, like everything you would ever want in a fantasy. And the characters are very funny with like kind of a wry wink wink humor. So those are very fun, and it's epic. It's like 8 huge books and then like 5 book spinoff series. So it's like a commitment. But again, it's like fun to live in those really well-defined worlds with like lots of characters, and so that one's fun. And if you like, I would say for younger listeners, it was really fun to do this book called Ernestine Catastrophe Queen, which is more on the like 8 to 10-year-old spectrum, but that book has like some crazy characters.
I think I was looking at that at the bookstore the other day. Yeah,
she's, it's like this young girl who's trying to raise the zombie apocalypse.
This sounds very familiar because I was looking at the young books. Oh.
It's very fun. Yes, it's very fun. If you have a child in your life, that one's super fun. In a crazy cast of characters. Yeah.
I just kind of want to read that one now.
Yeah. It's by Meryl Wyatt. And it's like just, yeah, her humor is very good. Yes. Adults would like it too.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. So we at Fictional Hangover are huge advocates of audiobooks. It is how we live and take in like 95% of our books. And we've seen it come up a lot on social media. And I've actually seen it come up in librarian groups as well, where people say that audiobooks aren't reading a book and that it's cheating. How do you feel about that?
So there was a study that was just came out about this, and I can't remember where it was, but I know I've seen it. And if you did some Google searching, you'd probably find it. But some scientists did a study on this and discovered that when you are reading or when you are listening to an audiobook, the same parts of the brain are activated. Mm-hmm. So typically, according to your brain, it's the same thing. However, I totally get the people who are like, no, but I just love, you know, the smell of the book. And I do think it's a different experience. I think they're both totally valid and worthwhile and fun. And, but I wouldn't put down audiobooks because that same part of the brain is activated. So just different.
Yeah. I read that study, actually. I'm glad that you read it too. That makes me happy.
There was another study they did too, about like emotional connection, where I think it's like they compared people who watched a video versus read a book versus like listened to an audiobook, and the people with the strongest emotional response were the people who listened to the audiobook.
That doesn't surprise me.
It does not surprise me at all. No.
Because my argument is always to people who say no, audiobooks are cheating, is that you heard a story throughout history before you ever read a story.
Yeah.
Because the written word is a lot younger than oral history. So it doesn't surprise me that you have probably more of a connection to somebody telling you something than you would have with reading it. The tone of voice, you know, even just the person, the environment that you're in, is probably more susceptible to your memory and sticking in your memory than necessarily reading that book. I think for me, reading a book, I get the emotional responses and I can remember feeling it, but I couldn't tell you when, where or how I read the book. Just I felt happy at that stage. I felt shocked at that stage. You know, but if you had the audio book, there's some books I'll tell you. Yeah, I stayed awake till 3 o'clock in the morning with my eyes wide open because I couldn't sleep. I was terrified by what had been put into my ear holes. Thanks, Dawn Kurdigage. So, yeah, that kind of doesn't surprise me that study found that out. I love audiobooks, though.
Me too, so much.
I've found some books that I've tried to read and not enjoyed, but as soon as I've listened to the audiobook, it's the best thing since sliced bread. And it's a lot of that has probably got to do with the talent of the audiobook narrators.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, it is it's a craft that's not praised enough in like our opinion on Fictional Hangover, that, you know, you can pick up this book and you can make it its own magical beast and transform an entire world just by reading it out in such a way that you draw the listener into it. And it's just a fantastic craft that, in my opinion, is very underrated.
Thank you. It is a very like intimate medium. So it in that way, I think it is very different than some of the other voiceover, because you are literally telling this story into a person's ear. Like you're literally right there with them. And like having to paint the picture of what's happening. Like it's funny. People often ask me, well, what's the difference between like stage acting and like voiceover acting? And it's like, well, you don't get to like, tell the story by raising an eyebrow. You don't get to color what you're saying by like your facial expressions. Like it all has to come through the voice. And so in some ways I think like audiobook narrators and voiceover actors in general have to have a stronger imagination, because you have to do it all through the voice, and there's no one you're playing off of. So
you can't hide behind a costume or a wig, can you?
No, and like if someone is, you know, saying something one way but not really meaning it, like that all has to come through the voice. So it's a particular challenge, but I love it. It's fun.
Have you ever found that you've gone into the recording booth and you're doing a particular series that you know you're going to be doing the House of Night, and you know it's going to be a Neferet, mm-hmm. heavy day yes. of recording? Have you ever got, right, okay, I need to get into the frame of mind. Right, where's the black outfit? I need something a bit more figure-hugging. Do I have any Armani or Prada shoes that I can put on and kind of somewhat get into character to help me be Neferet today? Or, you know, do I need to go and get an iced mocha frappuccino on the way in because I'm going to do Aphrodite and probably have a five-hour shopping spree with someone else's gold card for a few hours to get into that mind space? Have you ever felt like you've kind of, like, costumed before going into the recording booth? Not intentionally, like, you know, you're not pulling on the full ball crown, but you're kind of like, I need to put this T-shirt on today because it makes us feel a little bit more like Zoe.
No, only because, like, so rarely am I going in to voice one character. So, like, yeah. even if it's an effort heavy, there's going to be, like, a variety of other people she's interacting with.
Yeah.
So, no. And, like, for me, it's much more about, like, when I'm speaking the character, I'm often, like, remembering what she looks like, or, like, actually, like, the scene is playing in my head, or, you know, it's a lot about, like, vocal placement, like, where is she in my mouth and throat? Like, mm-hmm. who is she? And the minute that you go into, like, who is she? Like, you're there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I don't need the costumes as much. Although I did do, there was a commercial. There was, like, some weird industrial voiceover I did once where it was some strange, like, starship captain. And I just remember, like, I wasn't, like, really in love with the, like, script, and I was like, all right, what do I have in my closet that feel like a starship captain? So that's, like, the only time I've ever, like, kind of dressed for this.
I've got an image of you suddenly going into your wardrobe and go, where did I get a Star Trek commander's right. outfit from? It'll do. It works. Exactly. Where did I get it from?
Yeah. I mean, I think if I went in full, like, costume, the engineers and director would have been like, what?
Just rock the one, dear princess. Yeah, I'm doing sci-fi today. I need the inspiration. This,
like, small industrial thing.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
So do you have any secret tips for someone who has dreams of becoming a voiceover artist? Like, what is your thing that you would tell anyone that no one else knows?
I don't know if this is, like, what no one else knows. Often what I've discovered by, like, certain people who just, like, oh, I have a great voice, that means I could be a great voiceover actor. And it's, like, it's actually so little about the voice at this mm-hmm. point. It's so much more about your imagination and what you can do with your voice, and how you, like, connect with whatever it is that you're narrating or acting. So, and I think a big part of that is, like, taking classes. I'm a big proponent of taking classes. Like, I spent 3 years in graduate school for acting, which did a lot for, like, voice and speech and also just acting in general. And I'm not saying everybody needs to go that route, certainly, but, you know, there are great audiobook coaches out there. There are great voiceover classes. Get in and take some classes. Also, you'll meet the people that might help open doors for you, because that's really the key. Like, you have to meet the people that are willing to, like, take a chance on you, like Paul Rubin. You know, like, you have to meet those people.
Yeah, I think I've learned that there's a bit of luck that has to go into it. When we talked to Caitlin Kelly, her story was similar. Like, I was in the right place at the right time on the right day.
Yeah.
And that's how, like, oh, okay. So you have to be very lucky. And I am cursed. So yeah, I'll have to earn it another week.
You never know. You never know. Like, I've known many audiobook narrators that, like, plugged away at it for years and years and years and weren't getting any traction. And then all of a sudden, like, someone heard them, or, you know, they took the right class, and it just opens up. So, and I do think the industry has changed somewhat from when I got into it. So like when I got into it about 10 years ago, it was both harder and easier. So it was like there were fewer narrators. So if you met the right person, the doors opened more quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
I feel like now with the rise of like the home studios, there's so many more people trying to get into the business. So the casting directors are unfortunately just like saturated with new talent. But that also opens it up more. Like there is more access to them in some ways too. So yeah, because you can do it now. If you have a home studio, you can do it almost anywhere. So it's both like a blessing and a curse.
Stay
with it. You never know. Like I actually remember, I don't think Caitlin will mind me saying this, Caitlin Kelly, like we've known each other for a little while, but like I remember when she was getting into the industry and like plugging away and going to like meet and greets and stuff like that. And then like the next year she like blew up. So like you never know. Yeah, it's yeah. It can happen overnight. So
that's it. You don't know when the opportunity is going to appear, and you've got to keep going at it.
Yeah. So and you also may find, like I've noticed in my career, like I never expected to be doing, you know, audiobooks in this way. Like you may just find that like, oh, an opportunity arises in a different voiceover like area. Like I think you just have to be open and like see where the universe takes you.
Universe will provide. Nyx will provide.
Yes.
I need to go to her shrine.
Yes.
Hopefully she will let me in. She won't turn the doors to stone.
Oh, that was a sick burn. That was hilarious.
Oh, it was so good. So good. Lona like, nope, you can't come in. Ha ha ha. Ha ha. Not a door anymore. Ha ha
ha. That was so harsh. Oh dear me. Okay, so in every episode we always like to pluck a life lesson from the book or the series that we're talking about. Quite often it's a quote, but it doesn't have to be. So for example, with House of Night, it's not everything's about brown pop. I mean, come on. I can't stand the stuff, but you know, that's a discussion for another time. Is there anything from the House of Night series that it's taught you?
Okay, I'm gonna go philosophical, larger scale than the bro. but I really do like the aspect of what PC Cass and Kristen have done with this idea of redemption. Like that even if you make horrible decisions, you can still decide to make a change and become a different person, like Aphrodite or Kelowna, or there's just maybe even Neferred, we don't know. But
I think you do.
No, I don't. I really haven't read the last book yet. I haven't read it yet. But I don't know. There's just something really nice about that of understanding that like it is a decision. You can make a change. You can totally change your life despite the horrible things that you may have done in the past. So, yeah, good to know.
That is a good one. And chances are, as soon as you make that choice, you're going to make the change into an adult vampire, because it seems like that's just how the timing works out.
If you want the cool tattoos, you gotta make
What would your tattoos look like? Just a random question thrown out there. What would you have doodled onto your face?
Something with waves and water. Yeah. Nice. Really love my water. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And plus, I think that's so cool, like the whole wave imagery. Yeah.
Yeah, you would definitely be blue, and you know, maybe you could have a dual affinity, but I feel like you're leaning water. You're leaning very heavily that way.
More like, yeah. Sorry, Erin.
But now you've got Shailene, so.
Yeah.
Oh, she's cool. We do like Shailene. Yeah. She's very cool.
Yeah, we do.
And she's got cool other powers too, so.
Yeah.
Would you really want true sight, though? I mean.
Oh, that seems like a very big burden.
I did like the way she called Eric out, and she was like, "Eric, no."
No.
Yeah.
So and Neferet being the color of dead fish eyes was hilarious. Yeah.
That was a good image, actually. That was a really good image.
Ooh, it's not a pretty color. So is there anything that the process of voicing stories, is there anything that you've learned that stands out to you? Kind of like another life lesson, but from your voice acting side.
Maybe patience, because I'm not sure I'm the most patient person, but but like, so thankfully for like the House of Night, for the majority of the books, I've had a director and an audio engineer. But like, there have been some books, well, more and more now that I have a home studio, where when I'm recording from home, it's like, you're bound to make more mistakes. It's just not going to flow as easily. You're isolated by yourself. And there's like, I think a sense, and I think if you talk to a lot of audiobook narrators who have home studios, they will agree, like, you can start to get like a little down on yourself. Like, why am I making so many mistakes? Why is this going so slow? And like, and so patience and like letting it go and like staying in the moment. Yeah.
You've got to be kind to yourself. You've got to let yourself make those mistakes and, you know, forgive yourself for making them. Right. It's not easy working from home. You've got no bounce off anybody. And then the kitchen's only 10 feet away.
Right. Email and your Facebook and
I just watch Netflix for 3 hours. It's fine. It's fine. I don't need to learn a rage. Oh, dear me. Thank you so much for talking to us. But you know, is there anything that is coming up project wise or performances that you're working on? Anything that you are genuinely excited about, please share, tell the world your passions, your joys, anything that's coming up that you want the world to know about. Give it a shout.
Well, so in addition to doing audiobooks, which I love, I'm also starting to direct more audiobooks, and I also direct for the stage.
Ooh, so fun.
Yeah, so I just actually, it's closing like tomorrow, but it might come around to another city, but I was assistant directing on a new production of Macbeth, directed by Rebecca Schmidt. It is an all-female adaptation, and all of the characters are it's 90% Shakespeare's language, but it's all from the mouths of teen schoolgirls.
Awesome.
And it's so brutal, cool, and joyous, and so if you're in New York, come check it out. It might come to another city. We'll see. But so that's been really fun to work on.
Is there a website or social media we can link to for that?
At the Hunter Theater Project. Okay. So if you go to huntertheaterproject.com or .org, if you just Google Hunter Theater Project, it should come up. But again, it's like closing this weekend, so it's almost over, but it's been fun.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, Erica Schmidt, the director, is amazing. She's so cool. And she does these really interesting like Shakespeare adaptations. So check that one out. As far as audiobooks, Found is coming out this summer. So
yay!
So we'll see where the series goes. If you're into, I'm really excited about this other book coming out too. It's a little different than what I normally do. It is young adult historical fiction. But it is, I would call it like a book of quiet devastation.
Ooh.
It's by Monica Hesse. It's called They Went Left. And it's about a teen girl who survives the concentration camps in World War II and then goes on an epic journey throughout Europe to find her lost brother. It is beautiful. And get your tissues ready, because it's so that comes out April 7th by Hachette Audio. So I'm excited for that one.
Well, we're gonna have to add that one to our list. list of things.
It's a good one.
Oh, our list is so long.
I'm sure it is. There's a lot of good stuff out there. I could go on and on and on. I'm excited about a lot of different books coming up. So,
which is why audiobooks are so good. You can crack through them really quickly.
Yeah.
You don't know any secrets about, or you haven't heard anything about the Tales of the New World, because you also were doing those for PC Cast. Have you heard anything about the last one? Is it just on indefinite hold? Do you know anything?
We know pretty much what everybody else knows. So, which is that it is coming at some point, but it's right now potentially on a back burner. So I really love that series too. So I'm hoping it gets written at some point. I'm sure it will. But I know like PC is like super busy right now, working on a whole bunch of other things. And I think the potential of the TV series has kind of like shifted her time frame, and which is super exciting. I hope that comes to fruition. Yeah.
How is it going to be to see the TV series and you see these characters who you've voiced for the past 10 years on screen and be like, oh, that's different.
That's not me. What?
Well, so this happened to a narrator. Are you familiar with the movie The Martian and the book? Yes, So R.C. Bray was the narrator who originally narrated that book, and actually is kind of the audiobook kind of blew up first before the book did. And so like a lot of people had listened to that book, and then they went and saw the movie years later and were like, that's not the right voice. he's not using the right voice for that character. So, so I'm like, well, maybe like something like that will happen with the House of Night.
That's super interesting.
At least from us, we'll be like, that's not right. That's not Caitlin Davies. That's not right. I can't handle this.
No, but it's like super exciting, and I'd love to watch that and see what they do with that world. So and it seems like PC and Kristen are like really involved in it, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they seem to have a lot of say over yes and no's, which is something that seems to be quite a trend now, that when it's a book adaptation, that the authors have a lot of say in the character casting, even locations and things like that. It seems like they've got a lot of say in it, which is fantastic because it keeps the source real. And the last thing you want to do is annoy the fans. They are a passionate bunch.
They are, as they should be.
Scary sort sometimes, but yes. Have you ever, I was reading on, it was actually in the House of Night fan group on Facebook today, and someone was like, oh, I need to know what happened in this book because I'm only halfway through the series and I desperately need to know who does Zoe end up with. Have you ever been on like social medias and somebody's posted that question and be like, I know the answer and the book's not released because I've just finished recording and I could put a pseudonym in, and be like, I'm doing everything for it. What is that power like? Do you use that power responsibly? Is it a power that you kind of want?
I do, because you know sometimes I'm under contract not to say anything. But, I do, and truthfully, I'm not usually getting the books. I might be getting them like a few months before they're actually released, so it's not like I have like great knowledge like way in advance. Okay, sometimes PC like. So PC and I occasionally message with each other, and so she did, you know, occasionally she'll be like, so they're going to be going to Scotland, you know, like, so something like that, like, great, fun, but so sometimes authors, if I have, like, a good relationship with them, might, like, drop, like, some little hint, or, like, oh, you know, this character is going to come back as, like, a big meanie in this next one, or something like that, but usually, I'm not finding out anything till like right before. So,
because we spoke to January Lavoie in January. I said that right. about Libba Bray's Diviner series, and King of Crows hadn't been released yet. And bless, it's only been released 2 weeks. And we were like, please tell us. These are our guesses of what happens. Can you confirm? And she was so good at not telling us a thing, apart from to say it is big, and that's all she said. And we it was good. We were like, come on, please, we'll stop recording, just tell us something. She didn't prepare us, I would like to point out. We're still in a very vulnerable place, full of feeling and emotion, and so she didn't prepare us at all. But it's kind of like, I've got this image of you like of like narrators, because obviously you get the books enough time for it to hopefully be the audiobook be released at the same time as the publication book, sitting there going, whoa, I know who dies. Whoa, I know who such and such ends up with. Whoa.
Yeah, sometimes you're like, ooh, all right. Yeah.
The Game of Thrones, Kit Harington was caught speeding once and he got out of the speeding ticket because he said, yeah, I did live. I survived. And it's like, is that responsible use of this power?
I mean,
I don't think so.
You get in trouble for that.
I wouldn't test it if I were you.
No.
No.
Yeah, and I'm trying to be, you know, I want to be respectful of the authors too, because it's like their babies and they like having the secret and being the only ones in the universe, mm-hmm. knows. So, yeah.
It must be so nice to be able to sit there and go, I know what's going to happen and it's going to devastate the world. It's going to be so good when it's released. Please read it straight away so we can talk.
Yes. Well, I'm with you guys. I want to know what happens in Found. I don't have that one. I'll probably get that like next month, but haven't got it yet. So, no.
She said she was going to send me an arc and she better. My fingers are crossed. So if you need someone to squee about it with, hopefully it'll be me. And I can be like, oh my God, what is happening? Oh my God, look at her spider legs. Yeah. So maybe that'll happen.
Just start working on your spider leg cosplay now. You know you want to.
Oh, it would be such a good one. Yeah,
that'll be good. Can't wait for that. Hope she does send an arc. Really hope she does. Might have to mention it again to her. Like, hey, wink, you told me.
About stuff like that. I would just like send her a wink. Yeah, she's a lot of fun. I've loved working with her, and yeah, she's great.
She really is. And you have given many of her books an excellent life, and we appreciate you for that, definitely.
Thank you.
Definitely. Love listening to you tell me her stories. Is that weird? Maybe a little bit, but it's okay.
Yeah, it's nice. It's hard, I think, as audiobook narrators, because we so rarely do get to interact with like fans, and you know, we might occasionally, but it's you know, it's always nice to know that like what you're doing has actually affected someone or like made a difference. And so, yeah, it's nice to sometimes get the emails of like, oh, you know, that really helped me. Listening to you really helped me get through this rough time or whatever. Cause you don't think about those things, mm-hmm. As a narrator as much. Like you see it more like when you're, you know, on stage acting or doing something like that, like you have a more of a connection, but when you're in your booth, it's like, it's just you. And you hope that what you're doing is like good and go out into the world and like make people happy, but you know.
we have a special love for audiobooks and voice actors, and we try, like before we even started doing these interviews, we would always try to say, oh, and this person was the voice actor behind it and you should check out their other stuff. Like I think we might have noticed it too, that nobody's like fangirling about you guys, and they all should be. So yeah. we're trying to
do the fangirling, definitely.
Yeah, we do the fangirling, but we're trying to bring more attention to the other people involved with the books too. So yeah, hopefully we'll get to talk to more voice actors one day.
It's definitely a passion project, you know, because we've always said on Fictional Hangover, like especially since I just joined the team five, 6 months ago, you know, this is how we like to absorb the books and it stays with us a lot longer, and we want other people to enjoy it just as much as we are, and preferably the same medium so they can get the same feeling. And yeah, audiobooks rock, man. They absolutely rock.
They do.
So always, I'm sure our sentient Fictional Hangover Twitter account at one point did say, send some love to an audiobook narrator, and then they kind of got a little bit bonkers.
Yeah,
I would Twitter sure. Game sentience one day. It was very strange.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Steve West will never join us because of the amount of fangirling that I did. So,
love it.
that got very scary. Awkward. That was actually the day it did gain sentience because it told us to shut up.
yeah, that was too much. That was too much, and I should apologize. Write an actual apology letter for that one because it was too much. But really, we love voice actors. We love talking to you guys, and like thanks for taking time out of your schedule to meet with us, to talk with us, to join us on the show. Like, we want to tell the world about you, and hopefully it'll, you know, get a lot of listens, and everyone will be like, oh, I have to go and get all of the books by Caitlin Davies now. So,
oh, thanks, hopefully. Guys. This has been really fun. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent.
Yay. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you again so much for joining us. We love you. We heart yes. you in yeah. the House of the Night world. We heart us some Caitlin Davies.
I thought you were going to go Stevie Ray for a second there, Amanda.
I only did it a little bit. I only let my Arkansas come out slightly just then.
Love it. Let her shine.
Oh, no.
She's well, my high priestess.
Yes. Yes, Stevie Ray is our high priestess. Oh, man.
Thank you so much for joining
thank,
us. Okay, thank Liz,
you.
Honestly, thank you.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Yay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I'm waving.
So that's it for this episode, this double bonus episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss The King of Crows by Libba Bray. Contact us if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment or if you have any books to recommend. Also, be sure to look out for our next Would You Rather poll on social media, and don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Goodreads. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover.er. And now on Goodreads at www.goodreads.com/fictionalhangover. And finally, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and on Patreon. Thanks for listening.